The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Coming up on Columbia Calling with your host, Richard McCall, we're going to be talking today with Adrian Arsima, a Dutchman living in Columbia who's opened up his own news service to provide the world with news about Columbia. This is a no-holds-barred interview. If you're interested in Columbia, you're interested in what's going on, and you're interested in someone cutting the crap and getting out the news, then this is the interview that you need to listen to today. Things are happening here in Colombia. We discuss how the press is reporting the peace dialogues. We discuss the situation in Colombia. We discuss why he decided to set up in Medellin. Colombia Calling, your host Richard McCall. Don't miss it.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
Just finished school? Newly retired? Looking for a change? Get certified to teach English and move abroad like thousands do every year. Global TESOL College comes to Costa Rica, the global organization that trains and certifies more ESL instructors than any other organization of its kind. For the past 15 years, we've trained and certified over 40,000 graduates in the field of TESOL. Live the dream of staying and studying at the beach. You will be living at one of our beautifully centrally located accommodation options in Jaco Beach on Costa Rica's Pacific coast. With a school, beach, and great restaurants all within walking distance, in a safe community with all the convenience of back home, discover why so many choose to earn their teaching certificate in Jaco Beach, Costa Rica. Visit us today for more information at www.globaltesolcostarica.com. That's global TESOL CostaRica.com. Mention this ad when you enroll and receive $50 off your tuition. Enroll with a friend and receive $100 off. The world is waiting for you, and Global TESOL College is your ticket.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, new listeners. Welcome, frequent listeners. I'm Richard McCall. You're listening to Columbia Calling here on the Overseas Radio Network. I'm radioing in today from Bogota. Bogota, high up in the Colombian highlands on the Altiplano, 2,600 meters above sea level. Today, we're going to speak to Adrian Arsima, a Dutchman living in Medellin. The interview will take place in the second segment and then beyond that, but I'm telling you, this is an interview not to be missed. We're talking to a man who has created his own network, his own newswire service called Columbia Reports, to provide the world with the news, that's the unreported news out of Colombia. Colombia is not a very fashionable place to report on, unless it's cocaine, kidnapping, and all the other negative aspects of the news reporting from coming out of Colombia. But Adrian is a dedicated soul, a journalist working out of Medellin, Dutchman, as I said, and he is telling it how it is. This is a man who set it up in 2008, and it's going to be a colorful interview, I tell you. This man, he no holds barred, as I've mentioned before, no holds barred. You'll learn more about Colombia in this next interview than you'll hear on any mainstream radio station. This is really a show not to be missed, but so it's interesting times here in Colombia, as it always is. Interesting times in Colombia. The peace dialogues continue to take place in Cuba. We continue to not really know what's going on. Things have been agreed, some sort of agricultural reform has been agreed, but yet, as us, the public, journalists, whatever, we don't know what's going on. So I think I did write a blog about this a couple of days ago, so you can look this up at www.richardmccall.com. asking who's reporting the news in Colombia. And I know that there's a certain finesse and a certain delicate nature to all of this stuff. And I am studying also conflict resolutions, and I've learned that, of course, you know, these things need to be done behind closed doors and before any announcement is made. But this has been a long-running conflict. I mean, we're talking over 50 years here, and you know, I think people deserve to know. Or maybe people aren't asking the questions because they're cynical towards the conflict. This could be a possibility because it's been running for so long, and we have had peace dialogues before between various groups, some successful, some not. Most famously, the EPL and the M19. And of course, we've got some very high-ranking government officials who are former guerrillas, the mayor of Bogota, Gustavo Petro, not very popular, but equally a demonstration to the guerrillas out there today that it is possible. We have also Navarro Wolf, who is a subject of a front page cover of the newspaper that I covered and I interviewed the director of the 2 weeks ago, Richard Emblin. Richard Emblin runs the city paper, and you can see that the citypaperbogota.com, and read all about Navarro Wolf, this quite astonishing politician who's made a real name for himself and is a true success story of some peace talks. But I don't see enough people asking individuals like him what's going on. I don't see enough people questioning what's going on. I mean, we do see President Santos standing up there and declaring something or another and saying it's all going very well, and they've reached places that they could only dream of in terms of the peace dialogues. This is all well and good, but I, for one, as a citizen, a foreign citizen, of course, but a citizen living here with vested interests. I've got a hotel in Mompox, La Casa Amarilla. I'm married to a Colombian. I imagine at some point we might have children, Colombian children they'll be. I want to know what's going on. I want to know who's doing what. I want to know what the country stands to gain, obviously peace. I want to know what the country is ceding to the government. Of course, the outcome must be peace. The outcome must be a land without conflict. We have been suffering for far too long here, and I can only say this lightly because I've only been here seven, almost 8 years. But, you know, there's no Colombian family of any social strata who has not been touched by violence, be it drug-related, be it guerrilla-related, be it paramilitary-related, be it whatever you want. It's all connected somewhere on some level. So anyway, we're waiting, we're watching, and of course we're in the third year of President Santos's tenure, and things aren't looking too rosy for him either. Either he pulls off this peace dialogue, which will be wrongly sold by the press as peace in Colombia, but no, there's a lot more. There are more actors to this armed conflict. We have also the ELN, and you have, of course, the paramilitaries, or the newly emerged armed groups who are gang members running the old cartels, running the old paramilitaries, and extorting and terrorizing various regions of the country. There is very little state presence in a lot of parts of Colombia, and the infrastructure is frankly very poor. So we're waiting to see the outcomes. President Santos, if he manages to agree some sort of peace, a signed peace, a set down of arms by the FARC, well, I wouldn't doubt that he'd be elected again. I mean, in a shout, in a heartbeat. But if he doesn't, then the game is open. The elections are in 2014. The field of play is mobilizing. We're starting to see conservatives pulling themselves together. We're starting to see the left, the liberals, trying to put forward some agreements and some sort of ideas. So it's going to be interesting. It is always interesting here, as I say. But Colombia, a complex situation. So it's the third year of President Santos's tenure, and on Tuesday, so that's tomorrow, there's going to be all manner of strikes going on. And the problem about these strikes and blocking of the highways by the miners, by the health workers, by whomever, is that they can quickly spiral out of control. And something that P.G. O'Rourke, a political commentator and writer, American guy, once wrote is that, you know, these crowds can be swayed to mass dementia and sadistic dementia within seconds. So if these marches are, let's say, poorly handled, what's going to happen? So listen, if you're out there tomorrow, stay safe, be careful. All of you journalists, I know you're looking for the great shot. you know, keep an eye out on what's going on, report what's going on, but please don't put your lives at risk. Don't become another number, another figure, statistic. So Colombia, very interesting. We'll be right back with Adrian Alsema of Colombia Reports, and he has some really interesting things to say from his base in Medellin. So an hour flight away from us right now, but a beautiful city, innovative city. I know that he has some different opinions to share with us, and I make no excuses for his commentary. This is unashamed reporting by Adrian Anselma, and that's how it's meant to be. Someone who's giving an opinion upon which he has based it on years of experience here, not someone who's fly by night, not a flash in the pan, someone who studies the news, someone who reports the news. So you'd do well to listen, despite the fact if you don't agree or not. We're not pushing a political line. He's just giving an opinion. So this is Richard McCall, Colombia Calling. Stay with us. Don't miss this next interview. Thank you.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Are you looking to invest, live, or retire overseas? Before you pack your bags, you need to log on to NagelLaw.com. It's the only stop you need to make for global business, asset protection, estate planning, overseas residency, and citizenship needs. Our experts have experience working in 41 countries around the world. Starting a business abroad can be overwhelming without expert help. We assist clients with foreign trust, foundations, corporations, LLCs, IBCs, and property acquisition. Need help with IRA assets abroad, capital formation, foreign securities issues, banking, brokerage, or finance needs? NagelLaw.com. We ensure compliance with U.S. tax and regulatory laws. We engineer global structures to help our clients achieve their personal business objectives. Get started today. To find out about our introductory personal asset protection plan, visit us online, NagelLaw.com. We represent capital overseas.
This tree was never chopped down because this crutch never needed to be carved. Because these legs never grew weak. Because this child never got polio. Over the past 20 years, Rotary Club members have helped immunize over 2 billion children against polio. Now we are on the brink of eradicating this crippling disease once and for all. But we need your help. Thanks to an historic matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to make sure vaccines reach the people who need it, to protect the children of the world against polio forever. This is an opportunity to end polio now. Visit rotary.org/endpolio. Rotary, humanity in motion.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
Good afternoon, this is Colombia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and we're here with a very special guest this week. Well, like every week, we're here with a very special guest, Adrian Anselma, who lives in Medellin. He's Dutch originally, but now he's Paisa, as the people of Medellin are called, and he opened up a news portal called Colombia Reports. You can see that on www.colombiareports.com. Informing the world about what is going on in Colombia. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, Adrian, why did you decide, and what year did you start Colombia Reports? What made you do this?
I started in 2008. I didn't really have a purpose. I came here basically looking for a job because I was born in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And I just started a blog to kind of keep me busy while looking for a job.
Yeah.
But as you may know, there are no jobs. So I'm still there.
Yeah, you're still here. But so you decided to take it into your own hands.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, there was a dearth of reporting on Colombia. You saw an opportunity to open up something that would help inform people.
Well, what I saw, like, before coming to Colombia, like, I was just looking for a newspaper to inform me on stuff that would be affecting me as a resident.
Mm-hmm.
So when looking on the internet for news sources, I found that, like, there wasn't one on Colombia. Like, this was back in 2008. And so you had, like, what the news wires did, which was, like, rather like a one-topic thing. It was all armed conflict, which as an urban resident doesn't really affect me all that much.
No.
On the other hand, there was a lot of reporting coming from the human rights organizations. They were, like, there was a lot about, like, the human rights violations going on under Uribe, etc. However, that also didn't really affect me all that much. So there was a lot of reporting about, like, a Colombia that there wasn't particularly the Colombia that I was living in. You know what I mean? Like, how the police behave, for example, is much more important to me than how the FARC behave as a let's say a guest resident.
Yeah.
So what I basically did is just kind of like try to reconstruct Colombia the way that I experienced it. And offer information that I thought people like me, people with limited Spanish, would consider interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're churning out articles on a daily basis. How many roughly per day are you producing about Colombia?
Like between 15 and 20.
So, I mean, you are the top information service. You're almost like a wire service just solely dedicated to Colombia Reports.
Well, that's exactly how it began. Like, the idea basically was creating a news wire where people could get reliable news, where they knew that, like, the information they were getting had gone through, like, a certain journalistic process guaranteeing, like, the veracity of what they were reading.
Yeah. Well, this is, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, because I tell you what, the Colombia Reports is something that I check every day, and I know that people who have been to Colombia now check it every day because they've got an extended love for the country. And people who want to come to Colombia, when they Google, you know, Colombia news, Colombia Reports come up. So, you've got a pretty important role out there.
Yeah, which is kind of like weird to hear because, like, as you're doing it, like I'm try to just visualize me. I'm sitting here with my tracksuit, no shoes on, and just typing about on my computer. So it's kind of like strange. Because it, like, I do see in the numbers, like, we get high numbers, so I know that that a lot of people read us. It's just like, it's kind of weird if you think how the entire organization is set up, which is basically just a bunch of guys with good intentions.
But I mean, that's a pretty enviable lifestyle. I mean, you're living in Medellin, a very attractive city to live in. You know, the most, was it, awarded the innovative city of the year for 2012-2013, and you can sit there, you know, shoeless in your tracksuit working away.
Yeah. And take siestas when I want.
Yeah, well, this is important. As we were saying earlier, and as I have mentioned before, siestas are a recommended and advisable addition of Colombian.
They extend my life expectancy.
That's fantastic. Which is true. I mean, I think the day that I was least productive, I managed three or four in one day. But that was, I mean, that was pretty special.
That's a bit exaggerated.
Well, you know, it's hot. I was in Mompox. At the moment, I'm in Bogota. It's not so hot, you know, with the cold. I do want to sort of curl up and underneath a cover and hide from the weather. But you know, I'm in this big bustling city, and I feel like I have to work. But Medellin is slightly different. The climate is better. The city's more contained. So what made you use your base? What made you locate your base for Colombia Reports as Medellin?
No, that I think I made a mistake there, to be honest.
Okay.
Like Medellin is great for living, but for doing business, it's the pits. the level of corruption is much higher here than in Bogota. Things are just a lot more dysfunctional here than they are in Bogota, even though people from Bogota don't immediately see or would agree with it. But it's for starting a business, Medellin is complicated, and being a journalist, Medellin is nice because it's really photogenetic, and there are tons of stories, but it's not a very practical city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what they're concerned, like, I prefer Bogota, where people are like, look, you got 20 minutes, so shoot.
Yeah, definitely.
Instead of, like, here, after 20 minutes, like, you're just halfway the initial greeting.
Well, you have to go everyone about their family first.
Yeah, right. And personally, I don't really have the time for that. nor do I care to.
Okay.
Like, sometimes that kind of conflicts between, like, the culture where I'm from and the culture where I'm in.
Yeah, definitely. I understand that. But so you chose Medellin, but you're now there for you're there for the long term. You've been there since, I guess, before 2008. When you opened up this Columbia Reports, but have you had any trouble? I mean, you were talking about the corruption there and stuff, but. Yeah, I mean, is it that hard to deal with the paisas, with the people of Medellin, you know, when you're opening a business?
Well, no, not with the paisas, more with how the economy works here.
Right.
It's very, for example, things here are recommendation based, so no one will do business with you unless you come recommended by a family member or a family friend. In Bogota, things are more measured on merit. Here you really need to create a sort of like a network of friends to be able to get stuff done.
That's interesting, because I find Bogota as well to be, you know, very family oriented. You need to have your connections, but if you say it's more so in Medellin, I believe you, because being a smaller city.
I just noticed that when I went to Bogota, or when I talked to people working or working in politics in Bogota, that it's like, I mean, it's still more, I would say, like, corrupt or nepotist as in Europe, but in Medellin, it's just like a little worse.
A little worse. Oh, okay, well, that's not something I thought about. But, I mean, you know, we read, I mean, I troll the internet. I try and read it all at some point. But we read everyone raving about Medellin and life in Medellin. And it's usually based around, let's say, well, if you read anyone's blogs, it's usually based around pretty girls and nice weather. I mean, the city has to have more to it than that.
Yeah, it should.
okay. Well, fine. No,
well,
anyway.
No, but that is a thing. Like, if you look at, like, I think that's rather problematic. If here we boast about, like, the fact that we have, like, pretty women and good weather, like, what have we done to get this, where what have we done to achieve this? Nothing.
Nothing.
It's just a coincidence. So like Medellin has a number of coincidental factors that really make the quality of life here really high. Like the for example, the architecture downtown is horrible in Medellin.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you sit in downtown Medellin, you don't see the architecture because there's millions of pretty girls walking by. So, like, you get your well, you get your need for aesthetics pleased, but not because people have done a good job. Well, mm-hmm. as getting children is a job, but I wish Medellin would put more of an effort in actually being a functional city and not just like boast like these coincidences that are the merit of no one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's very interesting at the moment. We're talking to Adrian Alsema of the Columbia Reports, a news portal opened up here for news all about Columbia that you can see on the web, www.columbiareports.com. Don't go away, we'll be right back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. Expats are discovering that travel to Tulum, Mexico is like finding your inner hippie. Maybe you never were a hippie but kind of wanted to be. Maybe not. Maybe you're just into nature, community, and a big helping of relaxation. Tulum is a small town on the Caribbean coast of the Yucatan Peninsula that, despite an explosion of growth, actually has a plan in place to manage the increased demands in harmony with the environment. In a word, the city has prepared to grow in a way that doesn't ruin the very thing that brought people there in the first place. For expats interested in travel to Tulum, expect to find subtropical forests, long, wide beaches, and the mystical influence of a Mayan past hanging over everything. While some of Tulum's beaches have become known around the world, it's easy to find long stretches of sand with hardly another human nearby, perfect for downshifting from the rest of the world. The turquoise Caribbean on one side and jungle on the other has caused many a visitor to lapse into a hypnotic dream state they swear never to leave. From biosphere preserves rich with incredible diversity of animals and plants, to the eco-themed parks designed to put you in touch with the area's history, nature, and culture, you'll never lack for activities to activate your get-outside bone. But is it for you? Maybe a week or month-long trip would be in order. As with any new area, it takes a while to settle in and discern the true vibe of the place. Maybe you'll like it so much that you'll break out the beads, tie-dye shirts, and start channeling Jerry Garcia. Then again, you might say, to hell with this. But for jet-setting aging hippies, travel to Tulum could be just what you've been looking for. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We're talking to Adrian Alsema, a Dutchman living in Medellin, Colombia. Opened up his own news portal, basically a news resource for everything going on about Colombia, called Columbia Reports. You can see that at www.columbiareports.com. It's the first stop. Whenever you Google something for news, you're going to find articles there on that front page, probably right at the top, by Adrian and by his team of reporters. Now, he's based in Medellin, which is Colombia's second city. For me, Medellin feels a bit more provincial. It feels smaller. It feels culturally not as rich as Bogota, but it's going in the right direction. Is it going in the right direction, Adrian? What can you tell me about that?
I just compare it to South Park.
To South Park. So what is the town up there in South Park? Is it in Colorado somewhere?
It's just like some sort of – it's a mountain town.
It's a mountain town. And
it's rather particular. Like there are 3 million people living in the urban area.
Yeah.
But still, like, if I go into the neighborhoods or even downtown, like, I always end up like greeting everyone, because like Medellin really is a village.
And
when it comes to like it being provincial, it's made being provincial like a sort of a national sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really proud of its let's say, like, its cowboy culture.
Yeah, well, we had the biggest cowboy of them all, in the president's seat for 2 years there, so Álvaro Uribe, himself from Medellin, and very proud of it as well. But listen, tell me more about...
Yeah, well, that's not mutual.
I don't think... tell me more about your interns. Tell me more about who you have working for you there in the Columbia Reports.
Generally, the newsroom consists of between 3 and 10 interns, most recently graduated journalism, journalists, or journalist students who need to do an internship for their education, or people who have studied English or have studied Latin American studies and are looking to submerge themselves into Colombian society and mm-hmm. basically like understand better what this country is about.
Right. So you have a lot, and with the most of them would be from Europe or the United States, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. The majority will be from the United States and then the UK and then Canada.
Okay. And how do they go about getting this internship with you?
They email me.
They email you. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. So any of you out there, budding journalists or journalists looking for a placement for a while, and is there a minimum amount of time, Adrian, that these people need to spend with you?
Yeah, you'll need at least 2 months, and preferably even more, because like Colombia, even though like Colombia is much more complex than you think, and especially like when you write about it, and the way we do now, like we are at the moment the number one news source on Colombia, which also carries like responsibility. So yes. Like we can't just write whatever we like. We actually need to go through a rather large process of verification before we can do something. And it basically means for an intern that like the first 2 months a person is just completely lost in what Colombia is about. Like I just, for example, I wrote an article today, and I have been here for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I wrote an article about like the corruption scandal in Bogota with the public funds.
Yeah.
Only to now find out, even though this scandal has been going on for years, that this is a scandal involving the embezzlement of $500 million. So, and I'm supposed to be the guy that knows everything. So, imagine if you're new to Colombia and are trying to like reproduce reality through journalism. Like it's extremely complex, and it's really easy to basically talk nonsense when you should be making sense.
This is true, but I find, yeah, I mean, this is something that I've been working on today, in fact. I find it really difficult to follow the news here because, I mean, you have to know the historical situation behind everything, and it's not
as... And you can't trust the local media because they're both corrupt and incompetent.
Well, they're tied to the various families who own them, who are in charge of the country or in positions of power in the country, and so they're towing a political line.
Yeah.
But it's I find it very difficult. To, for example, we've got something I wanted to raise with you in this interview. We've got the peace dialogues taking place in Havana, Cuba, between the FARC guerrilla group and the government, and yet we get no news on this. I mean, we get snippets of things that are, you know, let's say the snippets of information which are designed to make us, for example, make fun of the FARC, or vice versa, to have you know, make fun of the negotiating team or Juan Manuel Santos, the president. But there's nothing actually tangible that we can see coming out in the printed press or in the mainstream television news shows in the morning. I mean,
because the Colombian media seem to not realize that we are at a turning point in history. Like, imagine that these peace talks that are ongoing at the moment are going to end an armed conflict that has been lasted for 50 years and has killed at least 250,000 people. Like, this should be... I mean, I couldn't think of anything more important for a journalist to tackle. And then when you look at how the Colombian media do it, they kind of like... They just scratch the surface of it. They don't investigate the talking points. Like, for example, the FARC and the government, they set up an agenda with five talking points before reaching an agreement, a final agreement. Mm-hmm. The first one was an agrarian reform. Now, Colombia is the agrarian, let's say, culture or the agrarian culture in Colombia is very important. There exists an agreement between the FARC and the government about reforming agrarian life or rural life, and nobody knows what the agreement is.
Yeah.
So, and personally, I think that media should make more of a fist. Like, well, if you have an agreement, if this is such a good agreement, then just open it up. Let us criticize it, and let us look like what we're going to do about it. Because right now, apparently, it's going to be like this, that the FARC and the government are going to agree to something, but we might think it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or it might not even be in our interest.
I think
it's very arrogant of the government and the FARC to make these agreements without sharing them with the public. And additionally, I think the Colombian media are just being douchebags about it. Like, they're just not doing their job. For example, the FARC are relatively good in their communication recently. Mm-hmm. They've been putting out explanations of their demands and why they demand such a thing. Like, it's all done in the old school guerrilla lingo.
Yeah.
But they are proposals, and they are proposals being discussed as part of a deal to end a 50-year-old conflict. Why are the media not reporting about the FARC's demands?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
My problem is, at the end of this as well, I mean, it's exactly what you're saying, is are the journalists asking the questions, or are they not being permitted to ask the questions? I mean, this is because there's no follow-up thing. Oh, yeah, so the FARC and the government are having a dialogue.
I think it's both. The thing with Colombia is that, like, my experience is when reporting is that people love to talk. People love it when you call them up and say, like, hey, I care. Give me information. I think what you are doing is important for other people to be aware of. People talk all the time and give information all the time. If you, even the government of all governments in Latin America, Colombia has one of the most transparent governments. If you want information, you can file an Open Information Act request easily. Mm-hmm. And the information will be given to you without anything. The thing is that no one is filing petitions to declassify information. Mm-hmm. So while the information is there and is almost begging to be published, journalists and the owners of news outlets are basically not allowing this information to become public, which I think is horrendous.
And I'm finding it very difficult because it's all interlinked. You've got agrarian or agricultural reform. You've got the redistribution of land. You've got illegal mining. You've got the conflict. You've got the narcotics trade. You've got the sort of feudalism that is inherent in everything here, and the corruption and the nepotism, and yet nobody's demanding to have the news. Nobody's, the word that I'm putting into an article that I'm writing at the moment is, you know, why aren't the Colombians themselves, you know, seeking to apropiarse, you know, to get that inclusion into these decisions? I mean, surely this is a decision that should be made by the country as a whole, rather than just a couple of people at the top.
But that's kind of interesting about Colombia, because it's where politics meets culture. For example, I'm not sure why, but Colombians do not have the same expectations about, like, how the state or their media should behave the way that I was brought up. Like, if a policeman here asks to search me, I tell him to fuck off. I tell him, like, look, I don't like guys playing with my balls. Mm. So unless you have a reason to suspect that I am carrying drugs in my underwear. I don't want you to touch me. Now, with a Colombian, like a Colombian will be like, yes, sir, and they'll immediately stand up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you're making it rather easy for people to abuse their power like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? What I think for Colombia to see a change in the quality of its politics and its policies, there needs to be a change in culture, a change in how the Colombians act towards their politicians and towards their media. So instead of just like swallowing everything, they just need to like stand up and say like, no, fuck you, once every so often. Like we've done so, and we've been ignored. Like I'm talking about the Dutch people.
Yeah.
Like we voted against the European Union and got it anyway.
Or,
and we've had our political murders too. However, the response has been almost opposite to the response of the Colombians in the Netherlands after there were like two high profile political murders in the first decade of the century. The Dutch actually became more vocal and basically like, well, if we're going to start like this, you're going to have to kill us all.
Mm-hmm.
In Colombia, the response is much more, I don't know, like, obviously this is a prolonged armed conflict. So, like, I don't know how traumatized the Colombian people are, but people here are not standing up for their rights the way they could and should. And as a citizen, you cannot expect your country to be run well if you don't get involved. If you don't assume Colombia as a matter that concerns you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, Adrian. You're really hitting a core vein of importance here and news that we need to be talking about. But we're going to take a short break right now. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard Nicole. Don't go away.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
You've decided that you want to move overseas for that quality of life experience you've always dreamed of. But you don't want to give up the best of back home. We agree. Things like high-speed internet, safe neighborhoods where you can stroll along a shaded sidewalk, a place where you know your neighbors and you have friends close by. These are important. Grand Pacifica Beach and Golf Resort gives you the best comforts of back home paired with the exceptional lifestyle only available south of the border. Imagine strolling along over 3 miles of secluded beach, playing a round of golf along the ocean, surfing a world-class break all year. Yourself, enjoying a fine meal on your balcony and toasting to another spectacular sunset. All this and more can be yours only an hour from Managua. Complete home and lot packages start under $100,000 and a nice home on the golf course is yours for the mid-twos. Come visit for a weekend and enjoy our oceanside golf course. Ride horseback on the beach, meet your future neighbors, and make some new friends. Grand Pacifica may be a place you'd like to call home. For more information, email Mike at MikesGringoLife.com. That's Mike at MikesGringoLife.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable health care, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
And we're back. This is Richard McCall on Columbia Calling. I'm here with Adrian Anselmo, a Dutchman living in Medellin. We're talking about news reporting and how the news is reported here in Colombia and how it is hidden, maybe. The questions aren't being asked that we need to be asked to know what's going on in the peace dialogues and what's going on in the country. So we've been, Adrian has been sort of touching a nerve, I think, for Colombians maybe out there, but it's the truth. The questions are not being asked and we're not being informed. So I don't know. I mean, Adrian, what do you see for the future for these peace dialogues in Havana, Cuba at the moment?
I can't say. Like, with the information that we are given, I think it'll be difficult to create a circumstance in Colombia where we can build a lasting peace. Like, everything looks like what we're going to see is a similar deal between the government and an illegal armed group, exactly the way we saw it with the AUC, where the government made a deal with a bunch of murderers, which benefited the government and benefited the murderers, and didn't result in a solution to the problem. And I fear that the talks with the FARC might just be the end of the FARC the way we know it, and be the beginning of a neo FARC, and will not solve or even touch any of the causes that are leading to so much violence in this country, not just by the FARC, but also by the ELN, also by the Urabeños, also by the Rastrojos, also by men beating their wives, by bosses mistreating their employees.
I'm just going to jump in there for those people who are not too familiar with the complete Colombia sort of political landscape. The AUC, or the Autodefensas Unidas de Colombia, a paramilitary group that were nominally disbanded and handed over their weapons supposedly in 2006 in a town called Ralito, Cordoba. It was a big deal underneath the presidency of the former president Álvaro Uribe Vélez, who was lauded at the time for having created, you know, having, let's say, made a surrender and demobilized one section of the armed conflict here in Colombia. But as Adrian mentioned, it wasn't.
While being the commander-in-chief of an army that was killing 4,000 civilians.
Yeah, so very controversial. And it is about the neo-FARC. It's the first time I've ever heard it in that called that way, but it's true. The FARC as a name may well, you know, be suppressed. And then just other little groups and splinter groups and cartels will grow up out of it, surely.
And which is quite likely to happen. It's a rather probable scenario to happen. You're never going to be able to demobilize a group so pluriform with one agreement. Like, some will continue to commit criminal acts or maybe even like acts of terrorism. However, I think you can minimize the percentage if there's more. Like, the integration part is going to be very important, but like, I don't even think that Colombians themselves are integrated in Colombian society. So how are you going to integrate FARC guerrillas into society?
It's a puzzle that one hopes that we're going to have to address it. I mean, we have to. No?
Let's be honest. Like the continuation of this war is idiocy. Mm-hmm. Like I don't understand why this war has been going on for so long and why no one is embarrassed that, like, you can't even, like, if you're going to start a war and you can't win it, then you're a loser, period. So both the FARC and the state have proven to be incompetent in combat. Like, they're unable to beat the enemy. So, But at the same time, they're unable to, like, get over it and just come to an agreement and move on. This conflict must end to create at least some conditions for us to have a discussion about where to go next with Colombia. Like, how do we want Colombia to become? And it's really important for the FARC to disappear or to lose power. It's also important that we create conditions where I can say that Uribe is an asshole without me being afraid that someone's going to kill me for it.
Sure. But this is
dear. Did I just call Uribe an asshole?
You can call him whatever you like. I'm not going to say it, but not because of my politics. That's far from that. But you have a very strong editorial line and an editorial integrity that I can only.
Well, this my point is that like my personal opinion about individual politicians is irrelevant.
Exactly.
The point is that we need to talk about it.
Yep.
And we need to feel that we can talk about it, and that talking about it, or debating solutions, or talking about the problems that we are facing or the challenges. That we can talk about it without there being violent consequences to us basically giving a shit.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, what is wrong with having an opinion?
Yeah.
That's it.
Because the irony is, like, I'm quite an outspoken guy when it comes to politics. However, like, I have found myself making great friends with political opponents, because between ourselves there's a gentleman's agreement that our opinions are worth nothing. They're just opinions. They are nothing to get like angry about.
Mm. Well, there's an interesting situation that you raised earlier, a little bit earlier. I'm going to say, you know, that the government, neither the government or the guerrilla, have been able to win this conflict, to end it and not move on. And I think this has to be a slightly embarrassing for the authorities there in Cuba, who are hosting, of course, these peace dialogues, because Cuba have notoriously and notably, backed certain left-wing guerrilla movements across the world, across the continents, and so on and so forth. But they never have really overwhelmingly backed this guerrilla movement in Colombia, because they, you know, their policy is that they didn't believe it was going to win. And
no.
So this has to be some sort of clash of ideologies between the FARC secretariat, who are there in Havana munching on smoked salmon, and those who are up in the mountains fighting away, you know?
I don't even see them actually being the same guys. Like, when talking about the FARC, if you don't mind me changing the subject.
Well, go for it.
There's a lot of talk about the FARC as if it were a uniform entity. You know what I mean? Hmm. However, if you look at the FARC, if you look at the differences between the FARC, look at the guys, like, look at the clothes they're wearing in Cuba. Like, they're designer clothes. Now look at your average FARC guerrilla. A lot of them are minors.
Hmm.
Like, they're not even, they're kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you ask them about why they are there, they might mumble some political dogmas that they overheard their commander say, but they won't feel them. They won't give. They don't care about them. They just, the thing is, like, a lot of the what we need to accept and acknowledge is that a lot of people in the FARC were in the FARC because they simply had nothing better to do.
Mm-hmm. They had no options.
They had no options. So. And if we are, for example, I've heard people say, like, kill them all, and I'm like, hang on, that's children of 14 years old you're talking about. Like if you want to kill Ivan Marquez because you got a problem with the FARC commanders, I can sympathize. If you're gonna call for the death of children, I'm like, no, hang on, that's not the solution.
This is true. As anyway, it's an interesting, I mean, very interesting times here in Colombia. I mean, at the very least, they're at the table talking. At the very least, this is positive. But we hope something is agreed, I guess. I mean, we hope that the 5 points on the agenda are addressed, but in a fashion that benefits Colombia as a whole, not just a few families and not just a few political entities. So,
well, the only way that we can somehow guarantee this, if we want to guarantee this from happening, we need to get involved. If we're just going to sit back and wait for a government that has no popular backing whatsoever, makes a deal with a guerrilla group that has, like, even less popular backing. Like, how can we expect them to come up with anything worthy? We need to get involved. We need to get constructive and construct this society.
Yes, this is very true. Now, very wise words from Adrian Anselmo of Columbia Reports. You should check out their website. That's www.columbiareports.com. Adrian is a Dutch citizen living in Medellin, Colombia. He set up his own portal there for news all about Colombia and trains up a whole bunch of journalists, gives them placements. And Adrian, just quickly to move the topic on to journalism, have any of your internees gone on to greater things?
Oh, yeah.
Many.
I just read an article on The Atlantic.
Wow.
Written by a former intern. Others write, another works for the Sunday Times in the UK.
Wow, so you've got that. So, there you go. This is a pretty high standards.
Yeah. It's really nice to see how this, because apparently, like even though we are just a bunch of guys wearing tracksuits typing, from outside, people do take us seriously. Also journalists abroad take us really seriously.
Sure.
Which makes me giggle.
well, let's not very early. Thank you very much for your time, Adrian. It's been a real pleasure having you here on Columbia Reports, and I hope the listeners out there have learned a great deal today on the politics and the situation in Colombia. Well, Adrian, please plug your website one more time so we can get you more hits.
Okay, so it's ColumbiaReports.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.